This is an I Am Listening original podcast.
The problem that may arise for Keir Starmer and the Labour Party generally is that people are impatient for that change. He's talked about change. How can he deliver it? How do you stop the small boats? How do you stop prison overcrowding? How do you fix the NHS? There's so many things that need to be done. I mean, we all work in local government or covering local government, and local government's in a mess. How does he fix that? There are so many things that he needs to address.
Welcome to the Kent Politics Podcast, your go-to source for insightful discussions on local and national political matters. Join us as we take a deep dive into local government across the county. Find out what the key decision makers have to say, what your money is being spent on, and how the party's policies could affect how we live. Plus, don't miss our regular feature, Westminster Watch, where we dissect the latest developments and decisions shaping the political landscape in the heart of the UK's capital. Engage with us as we delve into the issues that matter to you and explore the dynamic world of politics from a Kent perspective.
Welcome to the Kent Politics Podcast, which we're recording straight after coming out of the election counts across the county. I'm Simon Finney, local democracy reporter covering Kent County Council, and I was at the Weald of Kent count, and I'm joined by Robert Boddy, who was at the Three Medway counts.
Hello.
Dan Essen, who was down in Dover.
Hello.
And we're also joined by Group Political Editor Paul Francis for his take on an historic election in Kent and across the UK.
Hello.
Paul, what does the new political map of Kent now look like?
Well, it's gone from a heavily shade of blue to one which features the yellow of the Liberal Democrats, a small piece, some red spots and some blue spots. And it's changed quite considerably.
What, like German measles?
Yes, something like that. It looks rather like a funky new wallpaper, you might.
Yeah, something you might get in IKEA. So they've gone really from 16, the Tories have gone from 16 seats to, I think, 6, isn't it?
Mm.
So they did slightly better than the polls suggested, but really not great.
No, it was a terrible night for the Conservatives, and I think they're going to be very sore about this for a long time. And it casts a shadow over their immediate future, because they've now lost so many MPs, so many people who are ministers.
Mm.
They've got to start rebuilding, and it's going to take a long time.
Yeah, the pool of talent's going to be somewhat smaller, shallower than it has been previously. So where do you think they're going to start rebuilding from?
Well, that's the interesting question, isn't it? When I spoke to Roger Gale about what might happen after an election in which they lost, he said he would be fighting for the soul of the party, and he is amongst the MPs who believe that rebuilding starts from the centre ground, not on the right, on the far right.
Mm.
That's what he'll be planning to do.
It's been tight. There are ebbs and flows. Sometimes you know you're going to win. Sometimes you wonder if you're going to win. 1997, my majority went down to even lower than it is now. We shall come back up again, we'll rebuild. But I've got a job of work to do. And I think, as inevitably one of the senior members of the House, our job is going to have to be to try to make this work in the interests of everybody across the country. A lot of new members of Parliament on both sides of the House. We've obviously lost a lot of good people, but there will be good people coming in on the other side. And I reckon that my job, as a veteran, if you like, is to try to answer the questions and to help them to do the job in the interest of the people they represent. And we should do that.
So I wanted to ask you that, because you have always been a relatively moderate voice, a voice of reason in the House. And do you see yourself as a peer to both sides coming to this election? Obviously, we have Katie Lamb from the Weald, which is the new Kent, but there's also plenty of other new MPs across Kent and beyond. What do you think your role is going to be in Parliament in the next 5 years?
Well, I hope, without being pompous, certainly to offer advice, because there is an enormous amount to learn when you first become a new member of Parliament. And I remember Dennis Skinner, when I first came into the House, said to me, I asked him a question, and he said, well, if it was me, son, I'd do it this way, but because you're a Tory, you should do it this way. And actually, I was terribly sweet about it and told me how to do the job, that particular bit of the job. And there is this huge amount of camaraderie behind the scenes. From my remarks on the platform tonight, you'll understand that and there are some people that I would choose not to work particularly closely. But in the national interests, we have to get on and work together. So that's what we'll do.
We'll come back to, you know, where we think that the leadership challenges may come from. Dan, who were the sort of outstanding winners and losers of the night?
So, I mean, there's quite a few seats that, there were some that weren't entirely surprising. Where I was in Dover, Mike Tapp won with a majority of about 7,500, the Labour candidate. But what was, at this point, after campaigning for 2 years, it'd be more surprising if he didn't take it. What was quite surprising was that the Reform Party, just about beat the Conservatives, and the Reform Party took second place, which obviously the Conservatives are not particularly pleased about. And similar in Folkestone, the Labour Party won in Folkestone, originally not one of their target seats. And, Conservative Damian Collins, former MP, was deposed, but he was about 500 or 600 votes away from being in third to Reform UK, which rumour has it he was not particularly happy.
Yeah,
about.
So I believe the seat of Thomas Wells. I mean, it was tipped to go to the Lib Dems, and it went to the Lib Dems by a pretty handsome margin, about 8,600 something.
And
like
it's flipped quite a lot in the polls at various different points. So we've said, the Lib Dems will take it, and then they said the Conservatives will take it. At one point, I think some polls said maybe Labour will take it, but Labour came in a pretty distant third behind Liberal Democrats and Conservatives. But it's the first time Tunbridge Wells has been Lib Dems since 1906, and back then that was still the Liberal Party. So
what did Mike Martin have to say for himself afterwards?
Mike Martin actually decided not to speak to any media whatsoever immediately after the result came out, which is quite surprising given that his party have gone from having, 11 MPs to 60 or 70 and actually being relevant in Parliament. Despite that, he didn't really want to say anything.
We'll look forward to his words of wisdom in the future.
Yeah, you'd think he'd want to talk if he won so handsomely.
Well, he was quite keen on talking when he was a candidate. Right, OK. Were there any sort of surprises apart from Mike Martin's success? The two Helens, Helen Whitley and Helen Grant, were... Helen Grant was certainly tipped to lose, and Helen Whitley was sort of at certain points during the campaigns was tipped to lose, but they both clung on with very slim majorities. So that was not a surprise, but a surprise at the same time, because those seats have sort of changed markedly. Helen Grant's obviously got the Maidstone and Morling seat, which takes in a completely different sort of constituent type than she perhaps had when she had the Weald in her patch. And Faversham and Mid Kent was one of the ones that nobody was quite sure how that one would go, but they both clung on by sort of 1,600 votes. Down in the Weald of Kent, the new seat, Katie Lamb, came through with about 8,500 majority, which again was not unexpected, but one poll had on the eve of the election had Lenny Rawls, the Labour candidate, coming through on the inside with possibility of him winning, but in the end it was quite a distant margin.
For me, the big surprise was Damien Green in Ashford, who lost out.
Again, that was one that was... That was predicted.
It was, but I felt that he might be able to swing it round to his way because of his personal standing.
Mm.
And I think what did for him was the boundary changes, which saw him lose a lot of the villages.
The rural stuff, yeah.
And he took in his constituency now, embraces Stanhope, the big housing estate, and I think he paid the price for that.
Yeah. Well, the reform vote was very high, and that's what really did for so many of the candidates right across the country, actually, but not least in Kent as well. If you added the Conservative vote and the Reform vote, because that's where the votes came from, you would have seen, far more Conservative MPs in Kent than they actually ended up having. So it's an interesting sort of... whether it's all shaken down in the end. Robert, let's talk about Medway. You were there last night. There were three seats up for grabs. What happened in the end?
So all three seats, which were held by the Conservatives for many years, all flipped to Labour, which had been predicted, but a couple of them were deemed to be a lot closer than others. In the end, all three seats came to the Labour Party with about 3,000 or 4,000 majority. But the key thing, I think, was that the Reform Party was about 3,000 or 4,000 behind the Conservatives. I think it cannot be overstated the role they played in handing these seats to the Labour Party. They totally took chunks out of the Conservative Party. And I think that's not just the case in Medway. I think that we're seeing that in many seats across both Kent and the country.
Yeah, we just mentioned Ashford. I mean, if you combine the votes, it would be the same. And if Reform went standing in, say, the Weald of Kent, I mean, the majority would have been huge. So it can't be understated what effect that has had. But Reform have only got four MPs, and you have to ask yourself, well, they're not going to be able to pull that stunt again, are they?
It was a bit like UKIP in 2013, when they very nearly took control of the county council, which would have been a major surprise, but they fell just short, and after 4 years disintegrated.
Well, this seems to happen, that perhaps if the caucus of Reform MPs was bigger, that they would just give them more opportunity to sort of squabble amongst themselves in the way that the UKIPers did.
Yeah, UKIP was a party in which there were some serious factions, internal factions fighting, and I think that's just the nature of the party.
Do you think there's any scope for Nigel Farage being able to tempt some of the harder right element of the rump of the Conservative Party?
Well, that's what's going to be interesting about which direction the Conservative Party goes in, because there will be two factions, one pushing for the party to resume its place at the centre, and those who want to take it in a right-wing direction.
Is there a topic that you would like to be discussed on the Kent Politics Podcast? Perhaps you've got a question for one of our panel, or you'd like to comment on a hot topic in local or national government. Get in touch by emailing or sending a voice note to kentpoliticspodcast@thekmgroup.co.uk.
You know, we've got some fairly high-profile Conservative MPs still left in Kent. Any thoughts on possible contenders for the leadership should Sunak step down?
Well, I mean, so Tom Tugendhat, MP for Tunbridge, has maintained he kept his seat by a very healthy margin. He previously ran for the leadership of the Conservative Party, and one would assume that if you're an MP who harbours those kinds of ambitions, they don't simply disappear. So he's been touted by some as a possible contender for the leadership. He sort of positions himself on the One Nation wing of the party. So it wouldn't surprise me if he gives it a go. Whether he has the clout among his 130-something colleagues to actually succeed, who knows? But I reckon he'll give it a go. Other Kent MP, remaining Kent Tory MPs, though, I'm not entirely sure about. Like Laura Trott seems one to watch. She was Chief Secretary to the Treasury. A position of quite some importance, but I don't think she has much public profile to sort of run for a leadership position as of yet. But Sevenoaks is a very safe Tory seat, so I'm sure if she can keep hold of the seat internally, I'm sure she has plenty of time ahead of her to mull over that kind of thing.
And she does have sort of youth on her side as well, I guess. And I suppose the other thing about the future of the Conservatives is, you know, do they stick to a right of centre sort of place, or are they tempted to go sort of further to the right?
Well, I think the party doesn't know itself what it wants to do, and that's a dangerous position to be in if it stays for a long time. Let's be honest about it. They were probably having discussions privately in the run-up to the election day. So we know that there are factions within the party who do definitely want to forge a stronger link with Nigel Farage's lot, and a group who feel that's totally the wrong direction to go in.
That does create a problem. If you do have those people who are sort of to the right of the party, it probably would make more sense to join the Reform lot.
Yeah, but it's an unusual situation. I think in Kent particularly, and more widely, we haven't had this kind of situation before, where there's an independent group pulling the levers in the form of Nigel Farage, who's a very astute operator, whatever you think about it.
Yeah. Talk about Labour. What sort of challenges do you envisage them facing in the future? You're sitting with 400 MPs. You only got 120 jobs or whatever it is to give out. So you're possibly going to have the guts of 300 MPs on the back benches kicking their heels. Some of them very, very ambitious people. And maybe some of them weren't expecting to get picked. So what sort of problems do you think that might throw?
Well, I mean, the classic ambitious MPs, it's the tale as old as time of MPs basically getting annoyed when they don't get promoted, when they feel that obviously they're the best person for the job and nobody else comes close and all the rest of it. I think also what will be quite a significant problem for Starmer in particular is he has no excuse now. He has all these MPs, he's got this massive majority. If in 5 years' time he says, well, we couldn't really get everything we wanted done because that's not going to wash with the public, I don't think. He's got this massive majority. Now the problem is, delivering with it and getting things done and making people feel that the country's moving in the right direction.
When people make a protest vote like this, they do it because they're trying to register a protest, and they certainly have done that in no short order with the last sort of 24 hours. The problem that may arise for Keir Starmer and the Labour Party generally is that people are impatient for that change. He's talked about change. How can he deliver it? How do you stop the small boats? How do you stop prison overcrowding? How do you fix the NHS? There's so many things that need to be done. I mean, we all work in local government or covering local government, and local government's in a mess. How does he fix that? There are so many things that he needs to address.
Yes, there are. I mean, I think Ellie Reeves, the Deputy National Campaign Coordinator, was in Medway earlier this week, and she referenced a policy which had been sort of floated previously but hadn't yet been confirmed, which is sort of multi-year financial settlements for local government. And I think we're going to see a lot of that sort of thing. Not massive, groundbreaking, you know, really innovative ideas, but sort of small-scale life improvement sort of changes that I think they're hoping will incrementally, you know, if you improve everything by 1%, then eventually everything increases by a significant amount. I think that's what they might be looking more towards. Mm. Whether that will be enough is another question.
I mean, how many parliaments do you need to sort the NHS out? I mean, it's infinite. So let's talk very briefly about turnout. It wasn't the weather. It was a nice day on Thursday. Dan, you've always got something to say about turnout. What do you think the drivers were behind that?
Well, I mean, so it's important to note turnout. The BBC reckon national turnout was about 60%. And in some seats in Kent, like Sittingbourne and Sheppey, it was as low as 51%, which is like dismal by pretty much any standard in an advanced Western democracy with universal suffrage. 2019 general election, the total national turnout was 67%. So it's quite a significant decrease. And I think part of it is what I think anyone could have told you a long time ago, is that people aren't enthusiastic in their support for any political party. People don't trust politicians. People don't trust political parties. I think it shows even further, you know, Labour have won by virtue of not being the Conservative Party. That doesn't necessarily mean they will or won't deliver on what they've promised, but some would argue it means they've got a strong majority but quite a weak mandate, and
exactly,
that's it makes them quite brittle, even though they have a huge parliamentary majority.
So that is another problem he's got to face, isn't it?
There's a lot of diversity here, actually, in Sittingbourne and Sheppey. It makes it, I think, a really, as a constituency, many of the key opportunities, as well as challenges that the country faces, are encapsulated here. And it is somewhere where we as the Labour Party and what we put forward as our programme for government actually can really bear fruit and really boost the local area and hopefully improve the quality of people's lives here. I mean, number one, I've talked about this a lot, but it matters to me. The number of GPs we have here is incredibly low. And that's not just because of all the challenges that the NHS is facing nationally. It's also because there are some local structural reasons why actually it's been hard for GPs to set practices up here and really meet the challenges and needs of local people. So I want to work closely, obviously, with general practitioners and doctors and the NHS and the council and really see if we can crack that one over the next little while. That's like priority. But beyond that, there's the whole programme of renewal that we've been talking about, the Labour Party, all the way through this campaign. And I don't think it's any secret that the country's had a rough few years. And honestly, needs a new policy. So one of the things I want to bring to this is actually a degree of, I mean, hopefully just professionalism and assurance, but also connections to everyone here on the ground. So for me, being an MP is not just about Westminster as we know. It's actually about really being fully feet on the ground here and being able to work to understand all of the, as I say, the challenges and opportunities here, which is my job of next few months, and then make sure that our plans to renew Britain are really bring benefits here on the ground, people to support the Shepherd.
Dan, you just mentioned Sittingbourne and Sheppey. That was the Gordon Henderson seat, which has changed hands. What was the situation there? That was a low turnout, wasn't it?
It was quite a low turnout. It was just under 52%, which is pretty dire. But previously, in the 2019 election, Gordon Henderson had a majority of more than 20,000. It was huge. But this time around, the Labour Party won it by not much more than 300 votes, with the Conservatives in second and Reform UK very close behind the Conservatives, only about 1,000 votes behind them. If Reform didn't exist and didn't stand in that seat, the Conservatives would have stormed it easily. But because of that, it became a quite a close three-horse race, with Reform UK taking up an awful lot of presumably former Tory voters. And that's a pretty good example of the general function of Reform across the whole election. It's as a massive impediment to the Tory vote.
Just bringing in editor Matt Ramsden to talk about the company-wide effort to bring the results to you overnight. What happened then?
Hi, Simon. Good morning.
Good morning.
Yeah, incredible effort right across the company. Overnight, we've had 50 journalists at 18 counts right across Kent, bringing live results, reaction, analysis, special guests. We've been live on KMTV. Kent Online's been running throughout the night with various stories, telling people what's happening. KMFM started early this morning, telling people what's been happening as they wake up. And here we are in the podcast now, talking about it as well. The final piece of the jigsaw will be next week with our papers, when we'll bring readers absolute in-depth coverage of what happened.
I think there's a lot of journalists who want to have a nice lie down in a darkened room over the weekend.
It's been a long night, hasn't it? I think we've all been up for the best part of 30 hours now. Hopefully the end is nigh for us.
About a week ago, we stood in the studio and talked about our predictions. I can't remember what my prediction was, but yours, Paul, was, I believe, 9 Conservatives and then a split with the other 9, one of which would be a Liberal Democrat. So you're going to claim, obviously, that was the closest.
I am indeed going to claim that is the closest of all our projections. And I feel the prize money should be coming my way.
So, Okay. And Robert Boddy?
I think I said 9 Conservatives, 7 Labour and 2 Lib Dems. And I think there should be recounts. Check the results, because I think I'm still right.
Okay. And what about you, Dan?
As I remember, I said basically whatever electoral calculus said. I was always firm in my opinion Tunbridge Wells would go Liberal Democrat, so I'll claim that. But I said it was, I think I was saying 14 Labour, 1 Liberal Democrat and 3 to Conservatives. So the Conservatives, I guess, did twice as good as I expected them to. So I'll give them that. But yes, I'm happy to admit I was wrong.
Yeah, I think the electoral calculus actually finished up saying that there would be 4 Conservatives left over, 1 Liberal Democrat, and the rest would be Labour. So everybody, I think the polls generally were actually sort of not too far away from the mark, really. I mean, they're only
these pastors and their ever-shifting models, we were all close at one point, so it's fine.
Yeah, and just for the record, the Conservatives won 6, the Liberal Democrats won 1, and the Labour Party took 11 seats in the general election. Okay, folks, that's your lot for this special edition podcast. Thanks to Rob, Dan, Paul and Matt. We're all heading off for a well-earned kip. You can keep abreast of the latest election news on Kent Online. And see you next week.
Thanks for listening to the Kent Politics Podcast. Don't forget to check out stories throughout the week on the politics page of Kent Online. And you can watch the Kent Politics Show with Rob Bailey on KMTV every Friday at 5 p.m. or on demand at kmtv.co.uk.
This has been an I Am Listening original podcast. For more information, head over to our website, iam-listening.co.uk.